hello, everybody. Welcome to the Coogan Chronicles podcast. We win the award for the most awkward hellos and beginnings of any podcast.
It's all a work in progress. We're
going to say that indefinitely is what we realized. This is the Coogan Chronicles podcast, a podcast where two former child actors, kid
hang
performers,
out and talk with other child actors, kid performers.
Yeah, about,
we should say,
about what it was like for them.
We should say former child actors.
Yes, former. We're not hanging out with a bunch of 10-year-olds who are actors. We're not doing that. I don't think we will ever do that. Will we ever interview some actual kid actors that are currently kids?
Yeah, maybe. It's possible.
We'll see in time. I think the questions that we want to ask with this thing and the stories we like to hear are served up best in retrospect, I think is really the truth of the matter. But what are your thoughts today after our lovely chat with Hattie Jones, which you're all about to listen to, and we will talk about her in a moment. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah,
about,
I wanted to get your opinion today on something, Chris. So when we entered into this thing and we initially launched our show, we quickly learned that there were a few other podcasts on this exact same subject matter that launched right around the time that we launched. And I didn't like it.
Not even right around the time.
The
Me
same
either.
Day.
Yeah.
I was not thrilled about it.
Yes, I mean, neither of us were. In fact, actually, when we started recording, even before podcasts, remember that documentary Showbiz Kids dropped on
HBO?
Oh,
yeah, right. Somehow we just got caught up in the exact zeitgeisty moment just by pure happenstance, pure luck. We're thinking and talking about this stuff and other people are at the same time. And I wasn't happy about it. And I remember getting a panicked phone call from you when you found out about Showbiz Kids. You were like, you shit your pants. Almost literally, not quite.
Yeah, because
you were very nervous.
No, literally. Well, I thought it blew up our thing because I just thought, like, I thought, you know what the best thing about our podcast is that we're going to be the first ones to delve into this subject that I had never quite seen delved into before in a sophisticated way, you know? And I just thought, oh yeah, that's cool. Let's open up that can of worms. We'll be the first to do it. And I think first one to it, you know, takes the cake was my feeling, you know, on the conversation.
Right.
And part of that too, is because I thought, how much can you say about this? It just needs to be said. Some things need to be said about it. And let's find a platform that we can kind of say those things with. So then Showbiz Kids comes out, Alex Winters, which I think we're going to try to interview. Mara Wilson was part of that and is going to make this nice introduction for us. And so I'm so excited to talk to that guy eventually. But we found out, I mean, I feel like we found out the opposite, which is that, oh, this thing's a bit endless and there's like so much to keep talking about and so many things out there to continue.
Yeah,
but what's your thought? What was your thought?
Well, the point that you're making is true, but I just like, I'm acknowledging this for myself and then I want to get your opinion. And that is, I haven't thought about it until we interviewed Hattie today and she hosts another podcast that is on the exact same subject. And I had this thought to myself today, which was, I love that there's other people out there talking about this. I love that the microphone or the speaker, as it were, is getting larger and larger. And it, I think it helps our show and brings more awareness to the overall idea of what happened to all of these child performers and what is that like. So where at one time I was very nervous about it and thinking like, oh gosh, we're never going to get off the ground, I now celebrate our fellow podcasters and people talking about the same subject. And I think it's great that we're out there doing it. And as a result, I so enjoyed this conversation with Hattie today because it's somebody else on the front lines thinking about this stuff, bringing awareness to it and talking about it. So what's your take on that?
With all the picketing stage moms and all the front lines with all the little child actors memorizing the lines on the, yeah, no, I actually really appreciate what you said. I totally agree. And I think, yeah, I think, you know, when you go out, like this for me, when we started this was a pretty vulnerable thing. It felt like such a weird, just publicly saying out loud, I'm a former kid actor, felt like a big deal. It felt like probably when people like go into a 12-step meeting, they're like, I'm so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic for like the first time. Like it felt like an admission that was weirdly deeply vulnerable and way more difficult than I thought it would be. It's so weird, you know, and which is part of the catalyst for it. And so I think, you know, with something that vulnerable, something that seemed to mean so much to us off the bat. I think at first I felt threatened that there were like other podcasts suddenly out of nowhere all at the same time. I mean, Jaleel White has a podcast called Ever After where he interviewed a bunch of former Kid actors, and it came out on the same day ours dropped. It was so weird. Like the same day. Like out of all the days of the year,
yeah.
Same day. We had no clue it was coming out. We're going to interview next week a young former Kid actor named Rivka Reyes. And Rivka is also hosts a podcast. And so we're one of four that we know about. And I think you're right. Like I'm so appreciative that you said that because I think it's so nice. It's just so nice to feel like we're a part of the conversation and that we get to share it with people. What I've realized too, as time's gone by with, as we've talked about this and thought about it and talked to more people, you know, there's something really nice about, I realized like we're coming into uncharted territory. I think we had this idea of what we were going to sort of talk about and expose, and it's evolving real fast, you know? And I feel like we're just starting, to really do this thing, which is really exciting. And I think you're right. It's nice that people are on a bullhorn about it a little bit and getting public about it. And so cool. And yeah, Hattie's amazing because they've been doing this. They were doing this in the UK while we were doing it. And we come to find out today as we talk to her, her and her co-host Jordan, who we'll be interviewing shortly, came up with this idea at the exact same time, like the exact same month of 2019 that you and I were doing it. So it's nice, you know, it's a connecting force. There's a little force in nature to this. It feels I feel a little more spiritually connected to this because of something like that. And I think it's awesome. And I think it's nice that we got to collaborate with what we've been learning through doing this podcast and share it with everyone that's listening.
So real briefly on Hattie, I really enjoyed this conversation. Hattie was the lead role in the film Madeline that came out in 1998. She was 10 years old, and this is her only major acting role to date. And I think that is such a unique piece of her story and gives her a unique perspective that we haven't had from anybody else before. And I loved that about our conversation. And then
by the way, that was like a huge thing. We didn't even talk about it. It was a
major movie.
It was huge. I mean, it wasn't just a movie. It was like a comic book series. It's a book. I think it's a French book series. Yeah. Frances McDormand is the star of it opposite Hattie. And it was a huge iconic thing. It'd be like playing Annie in the musical Annie. It was like Madeline is an iconic character, and it suddenly was brought to life in a live action, feature
we're
film.
We're saying this, and all of our listeners know that. Like they all know what Madeline is.
Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't.
Madeline
is. I know it's true. It's grouped in with Matilda too. Like it's like that was like in the early 2000s. That was the DVD 2-pack. You know, it was Matilda and Madeline. They were like they were a little bit inseparable.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is,
but she also,
she's the co-host of the podcast. Are you from that show?
Yeah. Yep. And they predominantly talk to former Kid actors from the UK, and Europe, although they've talked to a few Americans at this point, myself included. They don't care about you, AJ. They never asked. They don't want you.
You know what? I feel privileged that you were a part of it.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. But it was so great having her. And so without further ado, here is Hattie Jones. All right. Hi, Hattie.
Hi, guys. Hattie. Hey,
AJ, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, very nice to have you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Is it immediately strange to be on that end of a child actor podcast?
Yeah, do you know it is? I'm like sitting here with a pen and paper, but I'm not sure why I need a pen and paper for this. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't need to make my notes on myself. So it is different. Yeah, it's quite nerve-wracking actually.
Is it? Is it really? What do you, is it more nerve-wracking than I find it, interviewing people way more nerve-wracking.
Oh yeah, I would much rather be asked questions.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I do get nervous before interviewing people, but there's a different kind of nerves when you know you're going to be talking about yourself, because you're like, oh no, what am I going to say, or am I going to remember stuff, and all those kind of things come to my mind.
Yeah, it's an it is the thing about interviewing. I found that was so strange and different from when you're approaching being interviewed. Is like you can kind of, if you're being interviewed and you're on the receiving end, you can essentially just go with the flow. You're like, okay, something's gonna come out of my mouth, and that's a nerve-wracking experience in itself. But something will come out. Well, you know, I live with it. The interview process, I didn't know, and AJ and I have talked about this a lot. Is like there's a rhythm to it because you're, you know. In equal parts, you're like letting go of conversation and letting go and just being present and talking. But then you also have to like keep all of these other thoughts in mind at the same time. Maybe a pen and paper would be really helpful. Addie's got
I
that.
know,
Maybe something
Addie,
like
you
that
said
would be
that, and I was
helpful.
like, maybe that would make things go smoother.
Maybe that would make things way easier.
You know what, though? That's so true, because I don't even think I use the pen and paper when I interview people. It's almost like a crutch, you know? It's something just to feel like, okay, if I need to, I can make a note
I
of
can look
that.
down.
But I don't think I ever do, as you say, like during an interview. Yeah, you have to kind of go with the flow, because you don't know what the other person's going to bring you. So, yeah, totally. And I know that actually I love doing the interviews with Jordan as well. I guess like kind of you guys have each other, because you know there's, if you get a bit stuck, or so, you know, there's like, oh, I don't know, you know, the other one kind of jumps in and helps out.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah,
And
I mean,
I
I think
think
Chris
why
and I
I
kind
don't
of
think we
see
would have
each.
ever done this solo.
No, but I think we
Ever.
sort of see each other as the hurdle. We're like, okay, we just got to get beyond each other and then into the interview. I was so
And they
interested
don't,
in this one, because this is the first time we've had someone on. It's like we're three experts in the field of the study of the child actor, and so to have another person on, to be able to talk about it from that perspective is so interesting. We haven't had that opportunity before. I think maybe Mara Wilson was the other guest that was the she was brilliant on talking about what it was like to be a child actor, and to have that sort of bird's eye view, and have really taken stock of what it all meant for herself. But I was particularly interested in going into this conversation with you because of your perspective and all of the people you've been able to talk to about it, and the opportunity to compare notes, so to speak.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, we have Mara on our show as well, and she's fantastic to talk to.
She is, yeah.
And yeah, I think just like the variation of people I've spoken to, there are so many similarities, I think, between kid actors, and most of those for me have been in the UK. But then there's also so many things that I didn't experience at all, and other people were, they were really normal to them. I guess partly it's the type of work people did. So even Jordan, my co-host, was in a long-running TV show. And that's so different from my experience of going into one big movie, and that taking up, you know, a couple of years of my life. But, you know, going every year to film the same show is a completely different routine to what I had. So yeah, that's why it's great speaking to so many people, because you just get all these different perspectives on it.
Yeah, I mean, AJ and I have talked about that because I didn't, you know, if I was ever involved as a series regular on a show, the shows were canceled or it was just a pilot. It was always short-lived, and AJ was on one for years, and I always felt like that. I was like, I've never had that experience, and it is a fundamentally different experience as a professional actor, particularly as a kid professional actor. It's a lot less erratic. It's a lot less jarring. It seems like because there's real stability to it in some capacity. So do you mind me asking, like, the genesis, what was the genesis for your podcast? And you know, we're going to talk to Jordan soon too in a few weeks. And you know, and so like, how do you know Jordan, and how did that conversation happen, and how did it go from conversation to let's really do it?
Yeah. So Jordan and I met when we were 19, and we went to drama school in London. So we'd both been actors before coming to drama school. And a lot of people, when they arrived at drama school, it was their first step into the industry. And they had just been at a regular school and they wanted to become actors. And so they were really starting from the beginning. But Jordan and myself had, between us, you know, a wealth of knowledge of what it was like to be on a set, of what auditions were actually like, of relationships with agents. I had an agent when I went to drama school. I think Jordan had an agent as well. So actually, we were coming at it from, I think, a slightly different viewpoint to the other people, maybe on the course. I think other people had acted, but I do think there was something that bonded me and Jordan. when we first met, actually, was just that we'd both been through it and we'd both done it.
What did that do to you and all the other kids? Were you guys like, was everybody like, oh my God, tell me? Or were you a little isolated because of it? Or what did it?
No,
not did it have any real effect?
No, I don't think it did at all. And actually, even now I'm speaking about it, I think there were people in the year who had done other things like plays and shows. So it wasn't just Jordan and I, but I think I think Jordan would agree that we definitely bonded over the fact that it had been a big part of both our lives mm-hmm. before arriving at Mount View, our drama school.
Mm-hmm. Is it very common in the UK for people to go into drama school, even if they had been performers at a younger age?
I think that's a good question. I don't think it actually is that common. I think if you have been, if you're working and you're super successful, you probably wouldn't go to drama school. Mm-hmm. I think Jordan and I were both, well, I'll speak for myself. I was definitely at the point where I wasn't working as an actor as I wanted to. And also the kind of school that I had gone to, everyone went to university after. It was like an academic school. It wasn't a drama, I'm talking about sort of like 11 to 18. Everyone goes to university. And so for me, I was definitely at the point where I thought, oh, I have to go and either go to university or go to drama school. The idea of just sort of becoming an actor at that age wasn't something that I thought really was a possibility. I didn't think I ever really gave it, I didn't even really give it like a second thought that I could just start acting.
Even though you had already been acting.
Yeah, it sounds so strange to say that.
So how did that happen? Like the Madeline movie, how did that happen as sort of, yeah, how did that happen?
So I was 9 when I auditioned for that. So I was young and that I was at a drama class in London, in North London. And they did a huge search for Madeline. And because there's lots of girls in it. So they were auditioning like any girl who was probably 9, drama schools. They were also going to normal schools and just looking for girls that would be confident enough to be in a movie.
They do that quite often, by the way. Anytime there's like a big project where they're looking for kids, I don't know if they do it all the time in the UK, but in the States, I've heard that story hundreds of times where like they've gone to like the area that the story takes place in, or, you know, or even just general searches around, you know. So if it's like the young kid in Star Wars, they do like a massive, like, we saw 3,000 children from schools who are not professional actors. Like, it's a weird, I haven't heard much about
Could
that.
Could you imagine that much shorten
but
that
it's a fascinating thing. Yes, it does. Yes. And I know a couple casting directors who have done that specifically. And yes, they're like, it is equal parts really exciting because it's so strange and weird. But also you're like, I need to just go back into an office and like read professional actors. Yeah, it must be so weird. But you weren't that. Yeah. You were in it. You were enrolled. You were dedicated. It was an interest.
Yes. So I was in this like after school club and they had an agency attached to it. And I actually wasn't part of the agency. But I don't think that mattered. I think it was just like, yeah, if you're in the drama class, you look right, come for the audition. Mm. And so I kept getting recalled. And I think my mom and dad didn't, you know, they weren't in the industry. They didn't know anything about it. But they were, you know, really encouraging and obviously happy for me to keep going to these auditions. And I loved these auditions because for me, the director was American, right? And I didn't know any Americans, and the producers were American. So they used to fly in, I guess, from LA or New York, and they'd be on the red eye flight, and they'd be there with their Diet Cokes or whatever. And this was like, you know, 1997. And that was so kind of out of my world, out of my normal school life of meeting, you know, just the people I was used to having these Americans coming in. And I used to turn up at these auditions, and obviously, the longer these auditions went, the nicer they got to you because they wanted, you know, they thought, oh, she might become the character. So then I was just like getting treated really well, just, you know, at the screen test, getting bought special sandwiches, you know, just treated totally differently. I mean,
that's
sounds
honestly
like basic
why we're
stuff
all
now.
In it. It's
yeah.
Special yeah. sandwiches. That's why. Let's be honest. That's why we do this.
That's it. That's all it takes for the kid to be like, all right, I'm in, guys.
Yeah. Like choose whatever sandwich you want. But, you know, I just was used to being at school. I had two brothers and I was just used to being treated like any other kid in any other. But as these auditions were going on, I was getting treated better. And I was like, wow, I just love being part of this world. I just remember thinking, I just want to keep, even if I just auditioned for the rest of my life, I would just be so happy just getting to be around these people in these rooms, you know, being made to feel really special.
If only it stayed like that. Sorry.
It's true.
I'll be happy auditioning for the rest of my life. You can give me special sandwiches. I'll audition for the rest of my life. That's hilarious.
Bring it back to this, the initial question that Chris asked, which is, so you go through all of these steps, but at a certain point, you and Jordan collectively decided we want to talk to people about this experience, a shared experience. So you were just describing your first big audition and getting on that movie and going through all of that. And at a certain point, you guys decided, man, we want to talk to other people about what that experience was like for them. What was that conversation like for the two of you to go through the work of launching a podcast and reaching out to people and doing the interviews and all of that? What was that inspiration point?
I think it came quite naturally because I do think Jordan and I had discussed previously when we were younger, you know, oh, we've both done all this work. We've had these experiences. And then it was pre-pandemic. It was about 2018, end of 2019. And
which is the exact same for Chris and I.
Oh, was it?
I was like, yeah, it was like December of 2019. We were on a train from Rome to Florence talking and hatched it. Maybe we were having the conversation on the same day.
Same time. This is a fascinating, there's something too, like when you think about like zeitgeist or like that, I know that there's like these, I'm not smart enough to remember there's like a philosophical idea that like generally in the population, you know, of humanity, when there's when there's an idea that it exists amongst a lot of people all over the place at the same time, that it doesn't just originate from one person. And, you know, we're one of, I don't know if you know, I think we're one of four that we're aware of podcasts where former child actors are interviewing other former child actors. And so, and we all came out at the exact same time, I think, like within a few months of each other. In fact, Jaleel White's podcast that he does, the guy who played Steve Urkel, his podcast we had no knowledge of, and it dropped on the same day that we released ours.
Oh, wow.
Literally the same. Someone sent us like a day afterwards. They said, hey, did you know yesterday there's another format? And we were like, really? It was the weirdest, you know, and we had spent months already recording. Yeah, it was so weird. And all of a sudden we just went, let's just release it that day. And it just happened to be the day that he was releasing his. And we're like, what a strange coincidence. Anyway, that all being said.
So it's late 2019. And you guys are having a convo.
Yeah, I think we're having a convo and I think we were WhatsApping, you know, I think it was initially over messages and do you know what? We wanted to work together because we're really close friends as well. And I think it was just like, that's the obvious, that's what we need to do. We need to talk to other people who have done this. Yeah. And, you know, we initially reached out to people we both knew as friends. We tried out a podcast as a kind of pilot episode with someone we're both friends with in my old flat, like pre-COVID, all sitting around a table. And it just felt so easy and natural. And we realized there was so much to talk about that me and Jordan had never talked about with each other. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, you can be friends with someone, but stuff that just you forget yourself that you just don't even remember until someone says something that sparks that memory for you and you're like, oh my God, I had that, or I remember that, or, you know, just, and then we sort of got a bit obsessed and of like looking up old TV shows and being like, what happened to the kid in that? I love that TV show. And then the pandemic hit and we were like, actually, this is a really good time to kickstart this properly because we're all at home and actually we can reach out to people that maybe might not want to physically come and meet us because they live too far away, or it's just they don't have the time. But, you know, asking someone just to spend an hour on Zoom with us felt like a much easier ask. And you know, people during the pandemic, you know, not everyone, but some people have more time on their hands and we're actually happy to kind of have those conversations. So, yeah, I think it was a kind of combination of both those things and we just decided to run with it. Yeah.
Wow. And is there, with your guys' podcast, there's like two questions that come to my mind as you're talking, which is, you know, was there an aim in particular? Was there like a part of it that you guys went in thinking like, because like AJ and I have said to each other, like we just said, look, there's so many stories we feel like that are out there that no one's ever going to talk about, like, you know, because we have them and realize like, and just like that, I was like, AJ and I had stories that we were totally unaware mm-hmm. of.
Well, a lot of it's the untold stories lives. Too, like the antithesis to the clickbait stories that you would see online, which was mm-hmm. another, you know, inception point for, or inspiration for Chris and I was filling in the gaps around the dialogue of the child performer, which is not the clickbait stuff and yeah, what it is, not- is actually like.
Yeah. And so I wonder with that, with you guys, like what's that, what was that a movement? And then also how did that change over the course of, I mean, you guys have interviewed dozens and dozens of people at this point. Yeah. So like, how has that evolved as you've opened up all these conversations and talked to all these people?
Yeah, I guess initially I think we thought it was going to be a chance to have a fun time with people chatting about their stories, which it definitely is. That is definitely like one of the main reasons we do the podcast, is to have a laugh and hear these stories. But I actually think it's gone slightly deeper than we maybe initially realized in some, not all, but in some of the conversations we've had with people. And, you know, we joke about it being a bit like a therapy session sometimes, and that is a joke, obviously. But there are times when some of the stuff that comes up maybe wasn't what we'd initially started the podcast to discover. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it has been interesting how certain conversations have gone down different routes than maybe we initially realized they would.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because we had a pretty big dawning realization just before we started, where we suddenly realized that if we were really going to open up this conversation, that we were going to have to mentally at least make room for any and all that could come our way when we start opening it up. And that meant things that we suddenly were not in the forefront of our mind when we thought of this idea, which was some horrible, you know, things that could have happened to people, or some damage that had been done, even if nothing unspeakably horrible happened, but that, you know, that there could be people we reach out to that aren't doing well. You know, it's like all of a sudden we went,
which,
oh yeah,
neither
we,
Chris nor I are equipped to like deal with. If somebody were to bring it up, we'd be like, should we call somebody? I don't
yeah,
know.
Like, what, yeah, like suddenly we're like, oh, it's a different responsibility than just that too, right? Like just the fun conversation.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, towards it all. Do you mind me asking, like in your time, was there anything, what stands out as probably the most daunting, or like took you off guard the most, or was the hardest thing to talk about so far?
I think, yeah, there'd just been, it's only a couple of times, but there's just been one or two conversations where I guess maybe, yeah, it's kind of what you said, AJ. It's almost like maybe my personality, I worry that I didn't give the response that person needed. Or maybe I didn't. I think I naturally back off a little bit on those interviews when I can feel something's going a bit too deep, and I'm not equipped to, because, you know, I'm not a trained therapist. And actually, I think I probably shy away from pushing people too far. So I would say that's my experience. And a few times maybe we've, you know, obviously we edit the podcast depending on what comes up. And I think sometimes I lean towards protecting people, which I think is a good thing. Like, I'm always going to protect the guest over like putting out an episode that I would feel like they might feel, you know, any regret in what they said. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say that I always steer on the side of caution. I'd be interested to hear what Jordan says about that. But yeah, that's what I would say. It's tricky.
It is. It's really tricky because it does. It immediately becomes, you know, we talked about this a lot. It was like, it became like a, we interviewed a friend of mine, a really wonderful actress named Madeline Zima. And Madeline, you know, I've known for a long time. AJ's known too. And we were talking, I realized like there was this weird, it was the first interview we were doing where I sort of thought, I can feel myself trying to solicit things that I would be good for the podcast, but that are not great for her. Not necessarily, not exactly, but like in a vague way. And I just thought, oh, that's weird. That's weird. I have that instinct because I felt beholden to an idea and beholden to the podcast itself, and to, as we were gaining listeners. And I was like, oh, right. It can run in contradiction to you just having a conversation with somebody and just looking out for that person and that conversation. It's weird. There's a duality to it. It's very It's very strange. Yeah,
and I'm more like you, I think, Hattie, or the way you just described yourself in that instance, which is being averse to making anybody uncomfortable or pushing like just back off.
I think I have the natural, I don't know about Jordan, but I have the natural. I'm like, hey, did you not like that person? I just kind of want to know. But the truth, but that also, I wonder with this with you guys is, have you found, like, this is what we found almost across the board, you know, without throwing everybody we've talked to under the bus in any way. But like, as soon as we're done recording, the next 10 to 20 minutes talking, suddenly there's all this stuff that kind of pours out that we're
that does happen. Yeah, yeah.
It happens every time almost. And we go like that. And every time that happens, I'm like, oh, that was the 20 minutes we were hoping to get out of this whole thing from everybody. And we have yet to bridge that gap. In fact, we've yet to bridge that gap with ourselves. Like AJ and I talk about it often, is like, I don't think we've even put forth ourselves that kind of real vulnerability and that real, our real deep thoughts about some of our experiences. And, you know, and we have certainly in some ways, but not fully, you know.
Yeah,
it hasn't been, the floodgates have not fully rushed open. And we wonder all the time if we really want to push to bridge that gap, if that's worth it, or if it'll just come in time. We don't know. So I don't know if you guys feel like that.
Do you know what? No, Chris, that's such a good point. I think I would agree with that. I think I'm really honest on my podcast about everything, but I still think there's some things I hold back on. But I almost don't even know what those things are that I hold back on. It's not like I'm consciously holding stories or I'm not. Yeah. It's almost like I maybe haven't fully worked it all out myself.
Yeah.
And by doing this podcast, maybe I've realized that actually.
I wonder, because AJ and I talk about this all the time. Like, we recorded yesterday, and for me yesterday, the recording was, I was sitting there going, oh my God, there's like big dawning realizations hitting me listening to someone speak, you know, where it just, I'm like related. And I was like, oh yeah, I do that. Oh yeah, I still do that, you know? And that was a very unexpected part of doing this podcast. And so I wondered that for you, like, if you mind me asking, like personally, you know, do you think, this is the disclaimer also, this question. I know you also, I read you wrote a play about being a child actor.
Yes.
And so it seems like you've explored, obviously, the, you know, not just your own life as a child actor, but you've explored it in general, the subject. Mm-hmm. And so for you, like, what do you think you've really, what have you learned about yourself in this time? Or what do you think you might still be figuring out, have you grown as you've heard all these other former kid actors talk? And
I think something that I've realized recently is when I got, it kind of links back to what we talked about at the beginning, was when I got to 18 or 19 and I went to drama school, I think something I thought was that being an actor was easier than what it was. And I've only really realized that recently. Because I was so lucky when I was younger to get these, you know, this big job. And then actually I spent quite a lot of time not wanting to work when I was in my teens. And I think I always thought, when I'm ready to start working again, I'll work as an actor.
Just pick right back
and
up.
I'll be able to choose the agent I want. And I'll get the big auditions again, because that they were the only auditions I'd ever known. And it didn't happen like that. I didn't walk back into the room, you know, with Tim Burton and start auditioning for Sweeney Todd again. I didn't get to go fly out to New York and screen test again. It was really working from the bottom when I was about 22, 23. And I wonder if I hadn't been a child actor, if I would have... I mean, I think I was really driven, but I wonder if I would have been more shameless. And I wonder if I would have picked up the phone more to agents. I wonder if when I walked into auditions, I'd like learnt my lines better. I'd be more prepared. I'd sucked up to people more. I don't know if that's a word you use in the States, but like, totally. I think I was just potentially leaning back on the fact that I thought, oh, cool. I'll just wonder when the jobs will come and I'll choose. And if I hadn't been a child actor, maybe I'd have been a more successful adult actor. And I don't know, because I'll never know. But it is something I have thought about recently, was that maybe I just wasn't prepared for how tough being an actor was, because I had it so good when I was young. And that's something that, yeah, I guess, yeah, as I say, I'll never know the answer to that. But I've kind but it's of a big realized question that over the last 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because so did I, like almost verbatim. Like AJ has kind of seen me go through my own version of that in a lot of other facets too. But at a core, there was like one fundamental thing I realized, which is that I had never been incredibly driven in terms of, you know, it's like suddenly I don't know when I woke up to the idea, I was like, oh yeah, that's what being an actor actually is. You know, and I see all these other actors that like, you know, I see actors that like have barely worked in their life that I've known as friends, and they're like always doing things. They're always promoting themselves, they're always putting themselves out there, and they're very confident about it. They really believe in it. And I've never done that. And like up until literally last year, I finally went, I think I need to start doing that after being a part of this for 34 years now.
It's so hard to do that stuff when you didn't realize you were like, oh, I don't need to do that. I don't need to self-promote. And then you're like, but people do, and it does help.
And I think you're right. It, for me, it was that big wrestling question, which I wondered, I was like, oh, would I have found a easier way or more success or something, right? Found a different result had I been choosing this as a young adult than sort of suddenly just being one as a young adult, because there is a difference in drive and motivation when you choose that as a young adult, you know, when you say to yourself, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. Cause that decision never came really, you know,
Really recurring theme that we've heard quite a lot, but I haven't heard it quite articulated the way that you just articulated it, Hattie. Are there other things as you've gone through this podcast, your podcast journey, other themes that you've seen recurring with young performers that have surprised you?
I'm thinking about, I guess people feeling maybe isolated from their contemporaries, I think is quite a common one. And having to have a lot of time off school. And so a lot of people maybe not having such strong friendship bases. I mean, that's not true with everyone, but quite a lot of people felt more themselves when they were working on set. And so actually going back to school and their normal life was harder, because they weren't there as often. And I guess having to grow up more quickly, having to kind of, I guess, feeling like you're ahead of other people, is a really common one. But then also strangely feeling more immature when you're older, because you've never gone through some of the other normal things that people go through. So in some ways you're more grown up, and in other ways you're actually like slightly behind with what a normal 25-year-old might be doing.
That's concerning. Kind of mixture.
Yeah. AJ lit up on that. Oh yeah.
And you touched on, so just the person we were talking to yesterday identified that same age of 22, 23, 24 ish. And you were just mentioning that about yourself. Would you have been more successful at that time period, 20, you know, that age bracket? And what is it about that time for people that were young performers and then making the transition? It doesn't seem like it comes at 18, 19, 20. It is that post-college years where it seems like that's the major transition, and you either get over that or you don't, but that's the big one. What is it about that? Or what was it about that for you, that age, you think?
I think when you're 18, 19, you can kind of still play younger. So I remember when I was like 19, just before I went to drama school, I was still going up for roles of like 15-year-olds. And I remember getting kind of frustrated by that and feeling like, I don't want to play a child, I'm 19. And I guess maybe when you get to that kind of 22, so you're kind of still in that child, you're still kind of that child actor bracket, even though you're not a child anymore. Whereas when you get, I think maybe when you get to 22, I mean, you can still play down, but I think 22, 23, 24, you're going for the adult actor roles. And so that's a kind of different category. That would be, I don't know, that's just my initial thoughts on that one.
There's also two, you know what I've also, in listening to that too, there's a thought I've always had, which is, there's also a ton of content usually for teenagers. There's tons, in fact. And then there's a ton of content as people start to become adults, per se. Like you do like post-college years and stuff. And for a while there was college stuff. There was like tons of movies that were made about college, and, you know, and that's kind of in the 80s, there was a lot. In the early 2000s, there was a lot. But there is a bit, especially these days, the last 10, 15 years, it gets a lot thinner. Not that there isn't stuff, but it gets thinner in your early 20s for roles. You know, like they don't write, you know, there's not a whole lot for people that are stories that they tell about a 24-year-old, 25-year-old. You know, it starts to get into your late third, you know, your late 20s and things like that, or older, or much younger. You know, so there is a bit of a gap just generally of how they make content.
Yeah. No, I think that's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you, you know, when you look at the things that other people that you see as like those common things, like for you, what were all your things you think that you, one, I mean, what do you think you, being a kid actor and your particular journey and the, you know, and you doing that movie and having a couple years where that's a huge thing and setting your expectations up for like Tim Burton reads, it sounds like, you know, what is that, you know, how did that shape your life as an adult? Like where do you think the most difficult things have arisen in, you know, from that, or, and, or really wonderful things have arisen from that?
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it? Because obviously that's just the experience that I had. And I don't know what my personality would be like if I hadn't. So I put quite a lot of things down to that experience. And, you know, I think I have a huge confidence, actually, like, and not always, but I do have an inner confidence that occasionally I think could be seen as a little bit of an arrogance. And I don't know, maybe my friends would say, I don't think arrogant, but I do think I sit back on stuff quite a lot in a sense that I do feel like I achieved something when I was young that I'm really proud of, actually. And I don't say that very often, but I do think I still hold that to something in my head, even if it sounds crazy to say that.
But I don't think it does.
Yeah, yeah, it's like I know what it's like to be in something like that. I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that out loud. And I know you have more to this point, but this is one of the things that inspired Chris and I initially, which was in thinking about our friends that were former performers that we wanted to bring on the show, which is giving them permission to fully own the successes that they had and experienced as a young person, because oftentimes we were seeing that it was almost like baggage or a burden that people couldn't fully fold into their life story, those accomplishments, because it, as if they didn't matter because they were young when they happened. Mm-hmm. And it created a frustration later in life because there was this sort of fissure that was, or this crack that was created between the things they had achieved as a young person and then their frustrations with their lives now. Mm. So giving people permission to fully own and be proud of those accomplishments and those big feats. So it's awesome to hear you say that you've been able to do that and be proud of that accomplishment that you had as a young person.
Can I ask you too, because when you said it, you know, not to try to put you under a microscope or anything, but when you said it, you know, it could see you, it makes you feel really good to say, but it's you feel like you go on a little on a ledge to say it too. Do you think your time talking to all these former kid actors has strengthened that in you all of a sudden?
Yeah, I think definitely. I don't think I would have said that a couple of years ago. I think I just got to a point with it. And me and Jordan have talked about that, where actually we're really happy to say that we're proud of the work we did. And I wouldn't have, in my heart, you know, I'm in my early 30s now. I wouldn't have said that to you at all in my 20s. I probably wouldn't have even engaged in that conversation. Whereas doing the podcast, getting a bit older, you know, I am able to look back and think, yeah, I'm really happy with that. And I do think it has shaped me. I do think it has shaped me as who I am as a person. But I hope that's in a positive way. And if it hasn't, then I guess I'll never know. So,
yeah. So then if it has, is there anything when you look back at all your time or the way things were done, you know, I guess I have two questions. One is I'd love to know what you've learned about the difference between child actors in the UK and Europe and America. But then I'd also love to learn is, as you've looked back retrospectively and as you've learned things from other people, are there things that bother you about it? Like, are there things that you now look at and you're like, I wish that's different. I wish that's changed. I wish, you know, I wish that's different.
Do you know what I think? So in terms of the America, UK, Europe thing, I think the main point that I've got that's different is that, the first thing is that, especially in the UK, you know, it's a smaller place. And so people don't have to necessarily move to LA or move to a different city in order to be a child actor. A lot of people will live where they live with their families and just stay there and just come to, you know, they would come to London to audition. Mm-hmm. And I do think that over a long period of time, that probably is a huge, you know, factor that affects people. If you've had to move away from where you were initially born, your family maybe have moved, your siblings, and you're, you know, surrounded by people all the time who are doing the same thing, as opposed to being in a normal school and then just coming, getting a train to London, doing an audition, going home and actually forgetting about it. And I think in the UK, and at least that's normally the way it works. Whereas I think in the States, a lot of people move to LA and then I guess
from all over the place.
Exactly.
They're transplants, and you know, AJ and I are perfect examples of that. It's the same. We came from other small places,
Oakwood Apartments.
We all met at Oakwood Apartments. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah, we don't have that here.
Yeah.
I guess the closest you would
that's
have is
great.
We have drama schools where people go when they're 11 or whatever. But I do think that's different because you're still living with your, I don't know, you're still probably going home to your home, your normal home.
Yeah, true. Yeah, absolutely.
Every time you say drama school, I just picture Hogwarts with the...
You can talk to Jordan about it because Jordan went to Sylvia Young, which is like probably one of the, you know, the most famous ones here in London. So he can tell you all about that.
That sounds great. Yeah. Did you guys ever have, like, in the States, there's tons of, AJ was a part, I was too young, like tons of these sort of like rodeo style rapping parents and their kids into like, come make your kid a star. And you like pay for like, a lot of money for these weekends where you show up and you like, it's like acting boot camp and modeling boot camp. And then like three or four agents come out and some casting directors, and they like, there's like usually like competitions and you can win prizes and maybe get an agent. And it happens all over the United States and particularly small towns, you know, they're like, go to someplace in the middle of nowhere, Texas, and be like, let's get all these kindergartners in here. We're going to make all you guys famous. And it's expensive. Do they have that around the UK?
Do you know what? No, like I never came across that. And I was doing it for, I never came across that level of like industry, I guess, where everyone's paying and people are making money off these kids.
You guys are not as shameless as we are here.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Not shameless.
My kid's going to be a star.
You definitely got the stage moms. Really? I remember when I was auditioning for Madeline and people, people would come dressed as Madeline to the auditions, and that never went down well with the directors. They always just wanted the kids that just were actually look normal and just like dress themselves and were kids. And the mums that came with their daughters, you know, already in the outfits and the costumes and the hats, you never saw them at the next stage. So we definitely had those kind of mums, but I don't think it was as successful. I don't know maybe if people are going for, British actors are expected to be different maybe to American actors. They want that kind of like slightly gritty, they found them at a normal school thing here, which maybe isn't as common in America. You're expected to be more like prepared.
Maybe here's the difference is like in America, when there are those types of films or shows being made, you know, where they want someone real and they don't want, you know, they don't want someone aware of the fact that they're going to be playing, you know, into a certain character or something like that. Then that exists. But the thing is, maybe America just has way more of what the UK doesn't have as much, which is like the total commercial side of it.
Yeah.
You know, which is like, you know, like, cause you know, I grew up acting in really small places like Plano, Texas and Augusta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. They're like little towns outside of big cities that aren't even the biggest cities in the States. They're not New York or LA or Miami or something. But I was working a ton in those places on weird little commercials and weird like hospital videos and weird like jingles and, you know, and like, so there's plenty of work for people in that in these little tiny small places, you know, and it's a very commercialized thing. It's not some cool director showing up being like, you know, like this is an art film. I'm going to be, you know, it's not that at all. It's like a one day weird job for $200 and God knows where that goes or who sees it, you know?
Yeah.
That maybe doesn't exist or isn't as prevalent in the UK as it is in the States.
Yeah. I think you're right. I just don't think there's as much of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no real pipeline need for it. Mm. Cause that exists everywhere too. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's theater everywhere, like, you know, all over Europe, you know, and we have that a lot of community theater, for kids and adults all around the States, but that, yeah, maybe there's a difference. Like there's a whole professional pipeline to like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you can look up like headshot photographer in like a random city in the US and there will be one. And then you can look at their website and they're like, who are all these actors in this weird little town out here? They're all getting headshots, you know, and what are they doing? Are they all working? Are they auditioning? Like, what are they doing? And so that, and guaranteed almost always, it's, there's a ton of kids involved.
Yeah.
Like tons of kids headshots and stuff.
Apart from the, like the Harry
Not
Potter
doing
kids.
That all the time and like Googling these things. But anyway, sorry.
Apart from the Harry Potter kids, is there a system or the phenomenon in the UK of the child celebrity? We get that a lot with like kids on Disney Channel or kids on Nickelodeon or that type of stuff. Does that exist in the UK at all?
Do you know what? I think of it as more of an American thing. If I think about all the kind of famous child actors, I feel like Americans love it in a way that we don't hear as much. I recently saw Licorice Pizza. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
I've seen it. Chris hasn't seen it yet.
And there's this because, you know, there's this scene where there's loads of kid actors dancing around in their pajamas on stage. And it really just got me thinking, it's such an American thing to have that. I don't know. I mean, obviously we have that here, but the audience were just absolutely loving it. And it's a really small part of the movie, but yeah. I think it's an American thing. I don't know. Maybe you guys disagree. I don't know. It's not something.
No, I don't know. I haven't thought about it in too much detail, but I mean, it also might play into the cliche American ideal, right? Which is that you can be anybody from anywhere and you can become the most wildly successful person on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and that dream has been a part of America, it seems like, for a long time, maybe since its genesis, and it exists. And there's something about that with a kid actor, because most of our famous kid actors were just kids, you know, and they just showed up and all of a sudden there's Macaulay Culkin, you know, it's like, and they just show up there. And next thing you know, they're traveling the world with Michael Jackson and they're hanging out at, you know, it's like, and they become icons and they, you know, that there is this sort of like, there is a bit of pervasiveness to the idea that like, you don't really have to do much. You could just hit it big. And that can happen, and that's attainable for anyone, and that's part of being America. Maybe the kid actor thing fits into that enough, you know?
I guess like dreams can come true or something. It's like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. Well, there's also so many former kid actors who have become huge icons for us, you know? I mean, whether it's like Ryan Gosling and Jodie Foster and Jennifer Lawrence. I mean, there's literally like, there's all the time, Scarlett Johansson and Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like they were all... Yeah. Kid actors who became some of our biggest, you know, stars. Ben Affleck, you know, there's so many you don't think of as, you know, as former kid actors that are. What were you gonna ask, AJ? Sorry about that.
I was gonna ask, maybe you guys look at family entertainment a bit different or have in years past, whereas we will put like Home Alone's a great example. It's a family movie. There's a kid at the center of it. Does the UK do that, where you would have a movie that's meant for families to all go together to watch it, but there's a kid at the center? Or would the adults in the UK go like, nah, we're not watching that, so let's just put adults at the center? Yeah, Madeline's a good example of that. Was a family movie.
Yeah, I guess. But actually Madeline weirdly was, I think, an American movie. Even though it was British actors, it was like a Sony American production company. But I think I think British people love the American ones, as you say, like the Home Alones. We you know, that's for us is as much, it feels as much to me part of our culture as it probably is. Obviously, it's American, but yeah, I think we do like them, but I think maybe we watch the American ones of that more. But that's it's a really good question. And I'm trying to think recent movies that have There was a home, a recent Home Alone that came out, actually. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, there was like a, I know, it was a new one. It looked like a...
It was British, I think. I don't know. Was it British or was it a British actor in it, I think? The main boy? But,
Maybe.
Yeah.
I have, I'm wondering a couple questions real fast, which is one is like, so when you think about this today of like coming on and like talking about you and not interviewing somebody, is there a part of this conversation that you were hoping to like get into or something that was like somewhat exciting? Is there an avenue we haven't carved out that was lingering? Like, did you think, like, I don't know, was there something in your mind like, I'd love to talk about that or this part or,
I guess. No, I mean, no, this is great. This is exactly what I wanted to come on and chat about. I guess one thing that I was thinking about that was just quite funny before I came on was like, oh, I'll mention that, was just talking about like what other people think the experience might have been like from the outside. So someone was like to me the other day, oh yeah, I looked up your net worth on Google. And I was like, my net worth on Google, $12 million. And I was like, I wish.
Hattie, you're doing great.
Yeah, I was like, literally, yeah, you're like, doing fantastic. Where do they get that figure from? Why is it on there? And when is it coming to me?
Yeah. Those were all the residuals that were actually owed to you from Madeline.
That's it. Yeah.
It's just like, you know, when you just Google things about yourself or like, you know, someone says they found this about you or whatever. And you're like, I didn't even know that about myself. Like, I don't know where that comes from and where they get this information. And then occasionally things are correct. And then you're like, how do they know that? Like, I think
it brought me back to like my early 20s. I'm sure true for you. Like I didn't know, cause we knew a ton of actors, right? We were around a ton of young kid actors and stuff. And it was always a question from non-actors, adults and kids. It was always like, yo, how much money did you make? But with this everyone anticipation wanted to know of that. Like, it's in the, like, is it 40 million or is it 80 million? Like how many millions are we talking? And everybody wanted to know. I had my own relatives sometimes. Like I had like relatives in New Jersey. If I'd go back and they'd be like, hey man, I had a cousin. Adults too, like an uncle and an aunt who were like, hey, how much money did you make on that show? And I'm like $200. Like, yeah. It's like nothing. And they were shocked. They were always shocked. I was like, oh yeah, what is that? Like, there's an idea when nobody knows, like, oh, it must be huge. It must be like so unfathomably big. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's really interesting. Yeah. And here's another question, which is, there was something I definitely want to ask, which is, oh yeah. So those stories, right? Those things that like perhaps might happen 10 minutes after, in the 10 minutes after we stop recording. I realize sometimes with people when we're talking to them, we're shooting in the dark, right? Like we don't know what to ask them exactly. Yeah. And so we don't know, in not knowing what to ask you, you know, maybe that's the question, is what would that be? Like, you know, what might linger, you think, in your mind after this conversation or in all your conversations you've had on your podcast? Like, what are the things that you don't necessarily get to bring to the, you know, to a podcast talk that maybe we can bring?
Yeah, no, I guess for me, it's that I'm so glad I got to have the experience that I had, and I feel really happy with how it worked out. And actually, I do think I've had a good experience, and having interviewed other people has made me realize that even more, is that I think I was lucky with how it went, and I think I was very protected. And, you know, when I think about the idea of would I have, like, you know, would I encourage other people to get into acting? I would always say yes. But actually, having done the podcast, I would still say yes, but I would just maybe have a few more cautions with that yes. Mm-hmm. Because I think having people around you who look after you and making sure that you have support and that you want to do it when you're doing it, I guess I've learned more about those experiences from doing the podcast. But I would just say that, you know, if we turn this off, I would still say to you guys, you know, I loved it, and I only have good things to say about my personal experience. But I know that isn't always the case. So
it is funny, because AJ and I were just going to start getting into this as we start of the season was, I think it's a good way to put it, is seeing how unprotected kids can be, you know, how easily unprotected, you know, kids can be as kid actors, you know, and it is a bit of that roll of the dice. Like, you know, you get lucky that you had those figures in place or you don't. And there's definitely not a guarantee is the truth. Yeah.
I think also checking in is really important with kids. Like, checking in, do you still want to do this? You might have wanted to do it 6 months ago, but do you still want to do another job? Because you can change your mind now. You don't, just because you did that, you don't have to do this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have two little brothers that were both actors as well. And one of them hasn't acted professionally in like 20 years, but he switched his mind literally every other month. So he'd be like, I want to do it. And then like he'd go on an audition, he'd get a job, and then he'd show up to the job like 3 weeks later and he'd be like, I never once said I wanted to do this. and then hated it. And it's the most erratic. Or then suddenly he'd be like, I want to do it. And then you'd find out he wanted to do it because there was a big test coming up and he just wanted to get out of school. And so there was, yeah, he was like, yeah, all over the place. And yeah, you're right. Getting some check-ins is definitely helpful.
Here's something for you. So Chris and I, as we move into this next season, we wanted to broaden out the types of people that we talk to. And some examples that come up are other folks that are involved in the entertainment industry that are in the orbit of young performers. So that might be like a set tutor, or that might be a representative from SAG, our union here, or that might be an agent or a manager that reps young people. As you guys move forward with your show, are there other conversations that you find yourself wanting to have that extend beyond just the actual former young performers themselves?
Do you know what? That's actually a really good point. And that's something that I think Jordan and I probably should talk about, because I think we've talked about wanting to interview different kinds of people, but I don't think we've actually decided on what that would be. But those kind of roles are really, I'd be really interested to talk to. I also worked myself in casting for about a year and a half, about two years ago, just before COVID. And I saw the industry from a really different perspective working in casting. And so I guess I would love to talk to, I never did child casting, but I guess people who do child casting is fascinating. And I know how hard those people work and how we were talking earlier about this. Yeah. Like just like the crazy kind of pressure actually that's on the casting department to find people. So yeah, and I've made loads of friends in that now. So actually that would be kind of an area I probably would want to delve a bit more into. But yeah, I think that's also, you just hear a different perspective, like from set tutors, my gosh, they see it all and they're with these kids all the time. And yeah.
And there's good ones and bad ones.
Agent
Ab, I did a project last year and there was oscillating tutors for a young child actor that was on the set. And one of them was absolutely amazing. And the other one was literally the complete opposite. I was like, it was just like the worst. And I was like, oh, it's great. And it just, I don't know why they were switching so often, but they did.
And you get what you get too. They just
you get what you get. And that day, this girl was really doing school. And the next day, this girl was just hanging out with us. Wow. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, that's a real
thing. And Hattie, what about you for your own, you know, in the future, having a family, where do you land on if your future offspring were to be interested in being performers, being a part of the biz?
So I know you guys know this, but just for the listeners, I'm pregnant. I'm having twins. I'm having twin boys. I don't know if I mentioned they were boys.
Twin boys. Yeah. You didn't say
that.
Well,
they're going to be so castable.
So yeah, I'm having twin boys. I'm pregnant at the moment and due in about 3 months. So me and my husband have talked about this because, especially with twins, you know, we could get them in loads of stuff.
that is the dream.
Yeah.
We don't know if they're identical yet. We're not sure. But even if they're not identical,
they don't care. Yeah, as long as if you're, the same parent wants to show up with two babies, the set's going to take them. They're going to take them. Wow.
But yeah, I mean.
Yes, you talked about it.
I mean, realistically, like, I think I would love my kids to go to drama classes. I would love them to kind of explore that. I think it's great for confidence. I think it's great to meet people outside of school. It's another element to, you know, your week. And I loved it. If one of them takes to acting and wants to audition, I would encourage them, but I would definitely not be a pushy mum taking them along with them not wanting to do it. So I would really just respond to what they want to do. My husband is like a not an actor type of guy. He's much more shy. He's like much more reserved. So the kids could go either way. I was such a confident little kid. Like I loved being center of attention. I was always putting on shows for my family. So that if one of them's like me and one of them's like Tom, my husband, then we'll know clearly that one of them might want to be an actor. But yeah, we'll see what we get.
And see how this evolves, because you know when my daughter was being born, I was like really open. My wife was horrified by the idea. and part of it sometimes she's like, do you see how many of your friends turned out so crazy? And I was like, yeah. It's like all those former kid actors, you really think our daughter should do that? That's been her big sticking point. But I think I've come to a place, like my daughter now at two does that. She does like being the center of attention. She does like performing for everybody. She likes telling everybody what to do and getting us to sing songs and I'm seeing it. And she does this hilarious little actor thing. She goes, everyone cry. And she goes, wah! She goes, happy, ha! And I look at my wife, I'm like, that looks like a little actress. But it changes. Like as I'll say like a little foreshadowing is it's gotten way more complicated. I thought it was a little, to me, I was like, yeah, you know, I think I would love for her to explore this and stuff. And suddenly she's there and I can see this like vulnerability. And I just think, no. And suddenly I've a part of me that I was totally unexpected, which is being like, absolutely not. You will never, ever be an actress. It's like ever, you know, until you're 18, whatever you want to do with your life, but never. And that's
going to be your answer for everything though. No, you can't do that. When you're 18, do whatever you want.
You can't do that. When you're 18, whatever. Until then, never.
And so Hattie, our final question for everybody is the namesake of the show is what you spent your Coogan account money on. But we know in the UK, you guys don't have Coogan accounts. Is there anything similar to the concept of a Coogan account, which I think you're aware of, but in the case that you're not, it's an account that money is put aside for young performers so that basically their parents don't spend it all. Is there any sort of equivalent concept in UK, Europe?
Well, I'm still waiting for my 12 million to come in from Google.
Oh, right.
So they're keeping it for me, obviously. No, I don't know anything like that here. I've never heard of it. Most people that I know who acted, they had parents, people put it aside for them for their futures, for when they were adults. That's kind of like just kind of stock phrase people would say is my mom and dad have put it away for when I'm older. And for me, that was true. And that's what happened. They had it I guess it kind of was a Coogan account. It just wasn't a Coogan account. It was just something I didn't know about it. We just had it there. And
do you mind me asking, did they take all of it and just do that? Or was like a certain amount of it spent on?
No, I don't think they spent. No, they didn't spend any of it. No, it was just my money in an account that got spent on like when I got older, you know, education, drama school, you know, all that kind of stuff. That I got to decide what I use my money for. Do you get it when you're 18, the Coogan account? Is that when it gets released?
Or a legal adult. So if you emancipated yourself, you can get it, you know. And so
we've heard stories of people specifically getting emancipated so they could like buy the car that they wanted and use their Coogan account money.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That happens.
Yeah. And I emancipated myself. Yeah. And I got mine at like just after 16. So I got mine a little early, but do you mind me asking, like when you heard about the Coogan account, do you think that they should have one in the UK? Do you even know, do they not have one still to this day? Or, you know, like what do you think your feelings lie?
It's a really good point. Do you know, it's obviously such a big thing in America, but it's just not something I think I've talked about with that many British people. Like, I guess maybe that kids here don't get paid as much for jobs as they do in America. Maybe people work more in America. Their money runs into big. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. Sorry. I'm kind of thinking out loud because it's not something I've thought about too much. I think you're right. I think there should be something like that because not everyone's parents are going to protect their money. And actually it's a really good idea. So yes, I totally agree. I guess what happens if kids and parents need to use some of that money for expenses? So say you're like, we need to use some of that money to pay for accommodation in order for us to get headshots in this place or Are parents allowed to kind of take money for those reasons? Yeah.
It's only a percentage. Well, yeah. So it's 15% and the other 85% is not protected. So
okay. That
would be available. Yeah.
So you could use it for expenses.
And that's where, and quite often that's where a lot of former kid actors talk about, like, you know, you ask like where'd the money go, you know, that they were making, and someone would be like, it went into that.
Acting,
that was true for my family.
And learning to sword,
traveling
fight,
around,
and
going to Los Angeles, and or moving to Los Angeles. For a lot of people, it's moving to LA and having a more expensive lifestyle because it's more expensive to live there than it is, you know, in a small town in Connecticut, you know, and so, you know, the part of the money you're making as a kid goes into that stuff.
So actually, 15% isn't that high, really.
It's not that high at all, actually. You know, I actually, the older I get, the more I'm like, it should be closer to like 40% is really where I start to put it. I'm like, you should put 40, you don't have to do a full 50%, but it should be like close to that. You know,
I really do. Think but so. No, I think it would be great to have that here. I think it would be, I can't see why it wouldn't be good. Like there's no reason not having it.
Well, Hattie, you've been awesome to connect with.
It's been awesome. I love chatting with you and getting your perspective and the fact that you're fighting the fight out there too, just like we are on the other side of the pond. This has been really fun.
Oh, guys, it's such a privilege to come on and chat to you. Honestly, it's like,
we're so happy to have you here.
It's so great to have also because I'm an interviewer, you're an interviewer. We've had, it's just so many similarities.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad we got to put you on the other side of it today. And things.
And I don't think we've actually said it out loud on the show, but could you tell everybody the name of your podcast and where they can find it?
Yes. So I do a podcast with Jordan Maxwell, and you can find it on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. And it's called Are You From That Show? And it's where we interview child actors and hear about their experiences. So if you like this show, if you like this podcast, you should check out ours.
Absolutely. and then maybe at some point it'll be just one big podcast.
Yeah.
5 years from now, we'll all be like, let's just do this. It's awesome. I really can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Thank you for asking.
Congratulations on the twins, on the twin starlet.
Congratulations.
Let us know when they get headshots, and and you've been wonderful, and we can't wait look forward to talking with your co-host coming up soon as well. So I hope
you
felt great,
guys.
and really thanks so much for sharing so much of yourself.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks,
thank
Hattie.
You